I see what Imsabad is saying when he berates us for the theme not being present in the mechanics. And we're talking about, oh, it could be this theme, it could be that theme. And then he's like, but it's not in the mechanics. I don't think, and I'm going to put my foot in my mouth because every like game designer who doesn't listen to the show is going to have said on record somewhere else that this is not how it works. But I don't think you necessarily have to represent your theme solely in the mechanics. I think if you thought very intentionally about the way that you design the visual and physical aspects of your game, you can make a theme pop that doesn't necessarily embody the game mechanics.
If I knew more about board games, I would have a response to that. Sure.
I'm Hunter Pence, and you're listening to the Misplay Podcast. Oh, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to The Misplay, where we completely overvalue our skill level in trick-taking games. My name is Mark.
My name is Jason.
I kind of hate that you've played a trick-taking game without me.
I thought about you the whole time I played.
I don't believe that's true.
I did. I took it out of the box. I unwrapped it.
Unboxed it. You got to work on that for the YouTube channel next year.
Yeah. And I thought about you. I was like, I'm playing a trick-taking game. And I'm playing with my wife. She brought home a game called The Fox in the Forest. No idea what it is. Hadn't seen it before. And she's like, it just spoke to me. And I look at it and I'm like, oh, this is a trick-taking game for tricksters. She's like, what's a trick-taking game? I think she thought I had like rabbits out of hats. Like that was the trick, like that magic, right? And it wasn't the act of, you know, just winning, you know, a set of cards. And so that whole kind of genre was new to her. She's somebody who hasn't like played a lot of hearts or spades or other trick-taking games like Euchre. So I'm like, yeah, it's a trick-taking game. I know all about trick-taking games.
Do you?
Turns out I don't. So I think I'm just going to annihilate her. I have a strategy. I actually really like this game, The Fox in the Forest. Like, it has some really unique takes. And maybe there's other trick-taking games that do this. I just don't play a lot. I just, like, assume I know everything. And I haven't beaten her yet. She's beaten me every time we play. I can't. I have a strategy. I go into it with a plan, and it just doesn't work out. One of the unique things about it is, again, I say unique. I just haven't played enough games, but I forget which one it is. Which game where you shoot the moon?
Hearts.
If you do that in this game, you're actually punished because if you get the most, if you get like a certain threshold high, you don't get any points. Which game is none is great?
Hearts. They're the opposite ends of the extreme.
Right. So
I'm getting the sense you don't actually know as much about trick-taking games as you may have thought.
I overvalued my skill. And so in this game, instead of just getting zero, you could get 0 to 3. And that's good. That's the best way to score points. And there were some other things that I really liked about the game. Like you could change the advantage suit. You can lose a trick, but then go first. There was a card that if you lose with this card, then you get to go first the next round. So you kind of get control back and then you get to do the lead suit. Really liked it. Not good at it. How's your trick taking game coming?
It's great. Do you want to play test it?
I do. I told Mark this week, I said, hey, you know, Currents is coming along. We're getting somewhere. We're making progress. What's next? I'm ready to, in one of our play tests this week, Mark, I told you, let's box it. Let's ship it. Let's go. I want you working on the next thing. Trick-taking game for tricksters called Tender Mercenaries.
Oh, these two things are not the same.
Sure, but I had to throw that in.
Everyone loves a Tender Mercenary.
So you do have a trick-taking game. You haven't touched it in a long time.
No, probably not in a year.
You should be working on it, though.
It's ready to play.
The Misplay is not just Currents, okay? We can't exist on just our first foray into the board game industry.
Season 3?
No, that's season 3's crowdfunding. Okay. Season 3 is just Currents crowdfunding. Season 4, you've already declared. Do you remember what you said?
YouTube.
No, season 3, YouTube. You don't remember. You said, I quoted you. I put it on Blue Sky. Our game would play nicely as an app. Season 4, we're coding.
your coding.
This game would play nicely on an app.
It plays great in playingcards.io.
Somebody has to figure out how to get it onto an iPhone. I'm locked in. Season 3 is YouTube and crowdfunding.
You're going to have to replace me with Scott.
I would need to replace me. I think it's just Scott.
Season 4, Scott.
Where are we going today? Give a preview of what we're going to talk about.
We're putting Jason in the hot seat, which is a game. I don't know if you've ever played.
Do I get points?
No.
Less exciting.
You just have to answer questions and hope you don't embarrass yourself.
Okay.
But you did Protospiel Online.
I did.
We talked last time. You have been a busy boy since Gen Con.
Yes.
So we're going to see the fruits of that labor.
But before we get into that, today's episode is sponsored by Board Game Casual. Board Game Casual is a YouTube channel welcoming people into the board game hobby with video reviews, recommendations, unboxings, tips for accessorizing on a budget, and more. What could be more casual than enjoying a board game with a Fentimans Cola? What's that? I didn't know either. In their latest video, Board Game Casual talks about their favorite refreshment while playing games. I like tea. Mark, what's your favorite board gaming beverage?
If we're at a board game cafe, coffee. If I'm at a board game night, a can of something fizzy.
I also think you would have liked the reason that Board Game Casual partially got into kind of playing board games, and that was for theme nights like cocktails and Catan. You wouldn't have liked the Catan, you would have very much liked the cocktails.
It's probably true.
I like the alliteration. Give Board Game Casual a view at Board Game Casual on YouTube, at Board Game Casual channel.
Where are we?
You got me. But you're supposed to say this line. Jason went ham with playtesting this weekend. That's me.
Easy fix. Here, I'll fix it in the show doc for you.
Oh, okay. Great. I went ham with playtesting this weekend.
You really did.
I did. I playtested the game four nights in a row.
Give us a bird's eye view recap of where you tested, what it was for, who the organizers were, and then we'll get into the details.
So this past weekend, I was signed up for Protospiel Online, which is an online playtesting convention. I did that on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. All three of those nights, I ran sessions, and I also played other people's games. And then on Monday, in conjunction with Greg Poole, we hosted the first ever online playtesting night for the Golden Gate Game Makers. We played Currents. And in all of those nights, in all four nights, it was really great to connect with people that, one, a lot of them are like us. They're building board games. The knowledge that they have about games and that they were willing to share was really great. And I would say that those four nights for me were like invaluable.
Let's chop it up a little bit. You did three nights of Protospiel Online, and you did one night organized with Greg Poole and Golden Gate Game Makers. Take one step back and share a little bit. How did you find Protospiel Online? How did you get involved? What did the entry process look like? I know you had nice things to say about how well organized and how well run it was. So paint that picture, and then we'll go into night one.
So I found Protospiel Online through Blue Sky, and they run a virtual board gaming convention three times per year. And I'll say one of the things that I'm really appreciative of is that we were able to do it because we were sponsored to do it. There was an option when you were signing up to say, I'd like to be sponsored. I would do this. Here's my game. Here's my information. But the cost at the moment is prohibitive, and it would be great if somebody could sponsor me. And then 2 days later, I got an email and said, hey, you're in. So that's really cool that there's people out there who, when they bought their badge, said, oh, I'll sponsor somebody. It's also cool that people are paying the playtest. It was $10 to sign up and playtest, and you come in as a playtester. I mean, the fact that people are willing to do that, that they're willing to pay money to come be a part of this community, I think that speaks to what the community is. And while this show is technically not an ad for Protospiel Online, it might as well be. I would really recommend this community for somebody who wants to virtually playtest their game.
Okay, so back-end registration, generous participant that sponsored us. What was it like to participate in the program when it was time for testing and all of that?
So I went in completely blind. I think when we do a lot of things, we look up how to do it, or, you know, I watch a tutorial, like, how do I do this thing? First exposure playtest all. I did a ton of research. I actually went into this really blind, and they send you an invite to their Discord. Once you get into their Discord, you introduce yourself. And then they had like so many different spaces where you could kind of engage with other people or talk about your game. I created a diary post that talked about our game. When the day came to playtest, I remember being like nervous and excited. I just put the kids to sleep and I'm going to come downstairs. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do yet. So I sat down and I read their post on how to post your game. You submitted your game into their website. It then populated into their Discord. And then there was a moderator there who would then say, all right, Currents is up on deck. Jason, give a little speech. What is your game? How many players are you looking for? And then players would thumbs up it and say, yeah, I'm willing to play that. Once you got the desired number of players, they moved you down into a Discord voice channel with them. And then you ran your playtest. And it was really smooth. One of the things that we haven't done that a lot of other people listening to us have is the Break My Games Discord. That whole Discord is designed around playtesting. We haven't gone in there yet. I think that's like bucket list thing to do, because I think if I had done that first, I would have understood this going into it. Because I've heard that it's pretty similar in terms of how it's managed. And it was really smooth. One of the nights, instead of saying, hey, I'm available right now, I planned it a couple of hours in advance. It was like 6 o'clock. And I said, I'll be there at 8 o'clock. Before I got there, two players had already signed up. So as soon as I signed on, there were two people ready to play. That was really cool.
It sounds like their systems are really well in place.
Systems.
Business. Let's get down to our business, the business of playtesting. Take me to Friday night, night one, the first time you got to teach and run Currents.
Well, if I wasn't a little bit nervous, I was a little bit more nervous because the very first person who ended up playtesting with me, one of them was Heather, and she is the person who runs Protospiel Online. And so I was like, oh man, I gotta really be on my game here. And the teach was really quick. There were a couple of questions about stacking and what counted towards the pattern. And right away, you know, Heather had told me it kind of has Reversi or Othello vibes. A lot of props for Scott, by the way, this weekend, because a number of people commented how professional the playing cards room looked. And Scott did a lot of work to make that look really clean.
Who's surprised? No one's surprised.
No one's surprised. I went into it with a little bit of framing. One of the things that I wanted to know in the first game was, you know, when you won or lost, how did that feel? Because we've talked about it internally a lot, that when you lose the game, is it because you just messed up and you didn't see it? And the other person didn't really win, you just didn't see it. That was one of the questions that I had asked them to kind of think about. During the gameplay, I took a couple of notes where they had said, I don't know what to do, or I don't feel like I know what I'm doing. There aren't many games the first time I've ever played them where I'm like, yeah, I know exactly what to do. I think that's pretty common when you're playing a game.
I think so. I have been thinking about that more and more, that it's really interesting that playtesting in these kind of con-based pre-registered events, you're always going to get day one players of your game, which I think is great. I think it's really important to know what a brand new player is going to think of your game, because their first two games are really going to dictate whether or not they're going to play it again. And we sit at the other end of the extreme, right? We are living, thinking about this game in our sleep, possibly dreaming about it. You know, I close my eyes sometimes and I see pieces moving in the Currents board. I wonder what it would be like to try to contrive a situation where we have like repeating playtesters that get to come back and see the game in its different versions. So, you know, we're working on what, version 14 right now?
Yeah.
It'd be interesting if we had playtesters that would be like touch points at each version to gauge how the game has changed, but also to have players that are a little bit more familiar, but still not as intimately familiar in having still a player perspective and not the designer's perspective of the game.
Yeah, I think that would be really good. And I think, you know, now being in this community, being in the Discord and still talking to people after the proto spiel, like, I think there's a fair number of people who would be totally willing to play your game, just as I would love to go back and play some of the games that I played. One of the comments that I really liked in this first game was from Jeremy, who said he liked how the game eased you into the complexity, that in the beginning of the game, there weren't many choices. There's only one other tile on the board. You place a tile, you move it. By the middle of the game, there were a lot of choices, and he felt like we eased them into that. It was a nice slow burn to get to the point where you were like, oh, now I don't know what I should do.
Good job, us. Definitely designed it that way.
We didn't?
Did we?
I don't think I ever thought about that.
No.
So the fact that he said that, yeah, you were kind of like, yeah, we did that.
Well, go back to the guiding question that you asked them at the beginning. How did they respond to the question of how did it feel when the game ended?
I don't think just one game gave them a very clear understanding of that question, but I love that Heather actually saw it. Heather understood it, and she talked about it a little bit in relation to other games as well. So I didn't have a clear answer on what our game was doing necessarily in that space, but there was a conversation around it. They played in about 15 to 20 minutes. The game ended on turn 22, so that was good. They got quite a few pieces on the board. There were a couple of playtests on the weekend where they only got a few pieces on the board before the pattern was there. So the first two people played it, like, had a good understanding. And I remember saying, that was a really good move. That was a really good move. So Friday night let me get the nerves out a little bit.
Take us to Saturday. You had to do double duty. You had to teach the game and play it.
Saturday I got to play with a tester named Zach. And Zach was very complimentary, super nice. Described the game as awesome, love playing, cool, fascinating, very cool execution. And I was like, box it, ship it, let's go. The thing that I really liked about playing with Zach was we played a game and then the first game ended and then he wanted to play again. Mark has his hands up in the air. And then the second game, it ended very quickly. I was testing with Zach, so I was playing with him. So I just had one person. And in the second game, there was a winning move available for me kind of very early, like the sixth move into the game. And I was like, do I take it? I'm like, yeah, you have to just take it. You have to show how the game works. And I did that. The best response ever again, oh, let's play again. So I thought that was really cool because, you know, I think when you're just trying to learn something, you're trying to understand something, and you didn't see something, it could be frustrating. Ideally, that's what we want from players who play the game. We said it many times before that we want the game to be replayable. That was always a kind of like, it might have even been in like the mission statement when we talked about it a long time ago, that we wanted to make sure what we were building was replayable. To get that feedback was good. But Zach also had a lot of really insightful things for us to think about. Zach is somebody who builds lots of board games himself. And so that was one of the really great things about the people who were playtesting your game at Protospiel Online is so many of them were other designers. And they come in not only with board games in general, but also from the perspective of I'm building board games. I'm thinking about mechanics differently. You know, one of the first things Zach had said to me was that wild tile is really confusing. And I'm like, yeah, no, I agree. It is a little bit confusing. I've lost games in playtesting where I just forget that the wild tile is all three colors and because you don't see it. It's not as clear as looking at a tile that's fully blue and then looking at a tile that is blue, orange, and gray. And it's like, you have to remember and track that particular tile is three different colors at the same time.
How were Friday and Saturday different since you got to be outside observer to the gameplay on Friday, whereas you had to be player on Saturday?
Yeah, I think in this atmosphere, you want to be an observer. It would be nice to be able to fully engage with the observation and watching because I was spending a bit of my time just trying to think about my own moves and how I could win my own game, right? I remember making the joke. I'm like, well, good news is like, I'm not good enough to always win my own game. So Zach did beat me in the third game. So yeah, I think we'd prefer to be an observer because then you can really pay attention and focus to what people are doing. And I remember and we'll talk about my Sunday playtest. There was a game that I watched and I was just like, oh, this is neat watching. I'm thinking about why they're making those moves against this person. And I had like, I'm so bad vibes watching them play. Where I was like, that's a really smart move. And I don't think I would have noticed that if I was actively playing the game. I would have been focused on what I was trying to do to compete against that and not be like, yeah, that's really good. Why are they doing that? Okay. Yeah, I think I know why they're doing that.
Okay. Well, you had a second session on Saturday night. So let's dive into that one.
So second session, you know, there were a couple of times that somebody had told me that, oh, you know who you have to play with? You have to play with Andy. Andy loves tile placement games. Andy is building tile placement games. So I got to play with Andy. And later on, I would eventually go on to play Andy's game, Order and Chaos and all that. One of the things that I really loved about this game, and I had given them kind of similar framing going into it, you know, how does it feel when you lose a game? How does it feel when you win a game? But I'd also asked, I want you to really think about the complexity of the game. Does it feel, you know, because Mike C has done some informal testing for us and said our game is somewhere beyond Go and chess in terms of the number of possible moves that are available in the game. One of the great things is Andy noticed this playing the game on his fourth move. And one of our first playtesters says they really like how you ease into the complexity. But I thought it was really great that Andy observed right away that, oh, eventually this is going to be really complicated. That the moves are going to be, there's going to be a lot of things that you can do to change the board state. I just love that that was noticed right away by somebody.
Did you come back to the question of when games ended, how were players experiencing the end of the game?
Yeah, you know, in this particular game, I had asked the person who lost the game how that felt because they made what I kind of viewed as the classic mistake where they know what the other person's pattern is and they're actively trying to prevent it. And then they make a move where they didn't realize they left it on the board. And so like the quote was, yeah, it feels stupid. We don't want that. Like that's not how we want people to feel when they finish playing the game. They don't want to feel like, oh, that was stupid. I think I've been working on that personally playing the game. And I think I said that to you recently. I'm trying to view it more as I just didn't see it. You know, it's not that I'm stupid. I didn't see it. You set it up really well to disguise and hide what you are doing with your pattern. Because that first game with them ended in just six moves. Again, it went back to a mental error with the wild tile as well. They gave some really good suggestions. They talked about making it a checker pattern or making it a unique color. Throws me back to I'm So Bad, who said once, you should just make it a misplay tile, completely different. You should put the misplay logo on it. And I'd like to test that online just to see what that would look like. Whether or not, you know, how you view it and how you see it, maybe when you see the misplay, you'll just know that's all three colors, as opposed to seeing just a little bit of underneath one when we're playing on playing cards and you can't fully see it. So I wonder, thought that was really good feedback. The feedback that stuck the most with me this weekend happened during this playtest with Andy and Kyle. Because like I said, how does the game feel? You know, are you having fun playing it is something we've been wondering. And Andy described something to me that I've never thought about before. And he called it, it's type two fun. I didn't know what that was. And so...
Oh, I'm not the only one.
Oh, you didn't?
No, I have no idea.
I looked it up afterwards and I talked to Andy as well and he explained it. It's like running a marathon for some people. That's a lot of fun for some people. But it's also still painful for somebody who loves doing it, that going out and running 26 miles, it's painful. It hurts at the end. It's hard to do, but it's still fun. People like doing that. That's type two fun. Does that explain it?
Sure.
You do things that are type two fun, I think.
Climbing.
For some people, that's it's challenging. It's hard to do, but there's a good feeling afterwards. So Andy called it type two fun. Whether or not it was his type two fun, I'm not 100% sure. What I said afterwards is, I don't think I want to build a type 2 game. I don't think that's my goal. I didn't set out to do that. I didn't set out to build a game that is painfully fun. Do you feel? But we also didn't set out to do a lot of things. We just kind of moved things around and said, this is a game.
Whatever happened to MMA Gauntlet?
That was regular fun. One of the really interesting pieces of feedback that I was able to talk about with this group is chess has, I don't know if it's a mechanic, but chess has a rule in the game where you put a player into a check and you announce it. So before you win the game, you tell your opponent check. You're telling them that you're about to win the game. And it prevents, the game physically prevents you from moving your king into a position where you lose the game. You can't do it. It's against the rules of the game. You can't move your king into check because that would just, the game would just be over.
Right.
And we talked about how this game, you can leave the board. You can make that misplay and leave the board just wide open for your opponent just to say, oh, well, okay, I win. And so can you imagine playing our game? You have to create a 5-pattern shape. And so you see 4 on the board, or, you know, this 3 with the stack, you tell your opponent check. That doesn't work in our game, right?
No, it doesn't work in our game because of the hidden information component.
Does every game end this way? Does every game end with me not seeing I'm about to lose? Does every game end with me making a bad play and then my opponent winning?
I would say that is one of the possible ways of how you lose, but it's not the only way that you lose in this game.
What's the other way?
The other way is your opponent sets up their pattern, moves from 3 pieces in to 5, and they win. Now, you could argue that I should be playing the game in such a way at the skill level of I'm so bad and your other tester that we're going to be coming up to talk about and Andy, and say you just should never put yourself in that situation.
Right.
But I think that's an unrealistic expectation, and it's balancing to the most proficient, most skilled players. Whereas you've said it yourself, so this isn't trying to be like a beat or like make fun of you. If we look at our internal playtesting, right, I win more of our games when we play.
Okay. Yeah, you do, Mark.
I'm so bad. I don't think I win more than 2 games in a session with when I play I'm so bad.
Okay. So I'm at the bottom. Go on. I got it.
But if you think of the 3 of us as kind of the extreme range in the game.
Yeah.
Or a day one, you can put a day one player below you if you want.
Okay, thank you.
If you take day one player and you look at the range of skill from day one player to I'm so bad, there's a really wide skill gap.
Yes.
And not everybody is going to play at that I'm so bad level of skill. And so I think it's an unrealistic expectation to expect everybody to play to that level. You're trying to play that level, and I think you'd benefit from actually coming up with a different strategy, because you don't see the game the way that I'm so bad does.
Yeah.
I don't see it either, but I play what I think is my strategy, and yes, I miss and like throw games, but I would argue that it's in service of I'm trying to implement the strategy that I'm playing with in the game. And if I overlook something that you have set up, I don't personally feel is like, oh, I'm bad at this. I feel like, well, I made this oversight because I was developing the strategy over here.
2 things can be true.
It's true. Take us into Sunday.
Sunday was the game where I set it up in advance. And so when I logged on, there were 2 people ready to play, which I thought was really great. This was one where they played 2 games and we went overtime. I actually felt really bad that we went overtime, but they were so willing to play again. Play a second time and give feedback. I was really appreciative of, by the end of it, I was like, I have to let you guys go now. I really appreciate your time. And I also wanted to go and play other games too. One of the cool things I think about the Protospiel Online was they have a golden rule. You should be playtesting 4 games to every one of your games that you run. And I wanted to play other games as well. And I did that. And so I wanted to jump into some other people's games and give feedback. So I also picked up a lot of experience this weekend on giving feedback. And I think thinking about other people's games helps you think about your game and how you want to think about it or how you want to discuss it.
how did what other people were asking for in feedback compare to what we've been asking for?
I would say it's relatively similar. I think we were doing a lot of what other people were doing in terms of how we talked about our game afterwards. The protospiel online was very, it was very informal. As had a formal structure, but after the game finished, you know, we had created the feedback form. We had edited the feedback form, but it felt weird when you have the people right there to say, okay, thank you for playing. Click my feedback form, fill out the survey. You know, it just made more sense to just talk about it live with somebody. I think the feedback form is good for people who end up playing the game without one of us there. So in almost every game, whether it was mine or somebody else's, it was just a conversation afterwards. And I was really impressed with the level of feedback that some people were giving other people, because it was in the cold open. You were talking about whatever you were talking about in board games, and I didn't know what you were talking about. And so sometimes I felt like these were people who are more experienced in playing and creating board games than us. Hearing them give feedback kind of gave me ideas. And in fact, you know, when I was listening to and giving feedback to Andy's game, Order and Chaos and all of that, I was thinking about how it applies to our game as well. There could be a lot of similarities there in terms of how you want the player to feel when playing that game. Because in that game, I felt like, man, I have so many choices. How do I calculate what the next person is going to do? Do you remember the first time we ever played Currents? How many players did we have in the game?
Four.
And what we realized was that, you know, you made a move, but then three other people took their turns. And now the board is completely different than what it was when you played. And it was just kind of chaos. And so in Order and Chaos and all of that, we played a 2v2 game. And so I had a teammate, and I apologized to Will many times for all of my misplays. But, you know, that's how I felt, was I played a tile to his board. They were playing hexagon tiles, and thinking, I'm trying to think what the next three people are going to do. And I just always thought wrong. Misplays.
It sounds like it was a really fruitful, useful, and informative time. Let's for a moment close the book on Protospiel Online. So anyone who's interested in designing their own games and has digital prototype should definitely get involved in the Protospiel Online in January. Let's talk about Monday, because you ran back running Currents and teaching Currents for the Golden Gate Game Makers.
Yeah, the Golden Gate Game Makers is a community here in the Bay Area that is dedicated to helping people make board games. It's a collective. It's hundreds of designers, and, you know, it's a hobby for most people, building a board game. And to have all of these other people around you as resources is incredible. They have come together to create this, and I almost hate hyping it up like I've hyped up Protospiel Online, because I am such a Johnny come lately to this. You know, these things have existed for many years, and I always feel a little kind of unauthentic when I talk about it, because what do I know? But it's a really great community for people. That's how we met Randy O'Connor, and Leonie from Biome, you know, is a part of the Golden Gate Game Makers. And so is Greg with his games. You know, it's not just one game. He's worked on many games in the past, but the game he's currently working on, Foosball 74 or Soccer 54.
I don't think it's necessarily fair to say we're new to this. We're new to the community. I think it is a resounding endorsement from people who are just reaching into the community and branching out to be more involved in the board game community in the Bay, that the community is so welcoming. It would be very easy to go in as a game designer by yourself with your first game and feel on the outs. And I've never felt that way at any event that I've gone to for Golden Gate Game Makers. When I went to Victory Point Cafe, they were like, let's make sure it's your first time here. Let's make sure people play your game tonight.
And I had a great experience when I went to Dogpatch Games with the Golden Gate Game Makers to play Currents ahead of Gen Con.
So we might not be super familiar with it yet, but we were very much welcomed in the space when we've ventured out into it.
Yeah, 100%. And so with Greg, because it kind of came up through our Discord. Greg and I were talking about playing each other's games. We wanted to play, he wanted to play Currents, I wanted to play Soccer 54, Foosball 74. And he had the idea, why don't we just reach out to Golden Gate Game Makers and see if they're interested in doing an online playtesting night? And he reached out to them. They were receptive to like, yeah, let's do it. And so an official meetup got posted on meetup.com and people signed up. And there were, I think at one time there were 10 of us online on Monday playing games.
It's funny to me that neither you nor Greg got to play each other's game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's part of being the host, right? Greg was making sure that other people were able to do their thing. And, you know, that's what a host does, right?
He did a great job.
He did. We played our game. I wasn't, you know, I was like, we can play Currents. It's ready. So we were lucky enough to have a couple of people play our game, Courtney and Daniel. And you observed, you watched me run that game. So you've been asking me questions. Give me your perspective, watching me run a playtest. Can you imagine if I was sitting over your shoulder at Gen Con? I'd have feedback for you.
I'm sure you would.
Give me what it was like from your perspective. So we're in Discord. Greg put a couple of us into a room, Daniel and Courtney, but then some other people had jumped down to observe and to watch as well.
I mean, you talked about the teach already, but I mean, like, the playtest ran smoothly. I thought it was really a smart decision for you to say, like, you make the moves that you want to make, and I'll deal with making it look right in the interface. I thought that was nice when people would, like, put things into the second level instead of the first level. I thought that was a nice touch.
Yeah, and for the audience, when you're playing Currents, you can stack tiles too high. In playing cards, I had no idea how to do it. Of course, Scott came in and fixed it. You could do it, you can stack them and see the tile underneath, but you have to stack it in just the right way. So you just have to drop it in just the perfect spot.
And then, you know, we got the kind of feedback that we were looking for. We had feedback that we wanted to get for Gray. In the pulling iteration, we got other miscellaneous feedback about how the game played and what the questions were. It was interesting to hear that it appeared to be and played less chaotically than a player was originally expecting it to.
We got a quote for the box. Very thinky, feels a lot like Azul.
High praise.
Right?
You know Azul is doing something right if I've played it, and I've played Azul a few times. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot is the physicality of the game. Don't know if I've talked about it on the show, but I feel like I have. I've talked about how I just dislike the way previous versions of the gray tile physically feel when it moves. You know, the orientation thing, I think, was a great example of something we solved for that I actually really like our solution for. But we've also gotten different kinds of feedback on the player aid, what the wild tile should look like. One of the things here was one of the players shared that the blue tile rule is the easiest one to kind of grasp right away. And so organizing the player aid so that the easiest tile is first and then orange is second, because it's like the next iteration. It's like the variation on the rule. And then gray being the most complex comes last, so that players kind of build a foundation of familiarity and then have something to depart from. Great feedback.
And easy to implement. I think that's what makes some feedback really good. It's like, oh, that's an easy thing to fix and it's going to make a difference.
Something really interesting happened in our debrief of this playtest with the Golden Gate Game Makers. One of the players, and I wrote it down this way, we would have to find them in Discord and message and be like, is this what you meant? But one of the players said, maybe there's something to not having any of the orthogonal stuff. Maybe there's only horizontal and vertical.
And you wrote it that way? And I actually put a comment that said, is this a typo?
No, that's what I heard. And that was like my shorthand for what feedback sounded like to me.
But what this led to was really interesting.
And so if we're looking, this is a beautiful iteration of, we got feedback and it opened up the possibility for a solution that we hadn't considered yet. We're still not satisfied with the gray tile or the gray tile mechanic.
There's three tiles in our game, and we said this several times during the weekend. There's three tiles in our game, blue, orange, and gray. Blue and orange haven't changed since like version 2. They've always done what they do, and it works really, really smooth. The gray tile, the third tile, has always been, how do we fit it in? How do we have three tiles in this game that are balanced?
And so what that led to is it's led us to version 14. We tried a slight twist on the blue tile mechanic, essentially. We broke it up. The original rule for the blue tile, when you place a tile, you're going to move a surrounding tile north, south, east, or west.
Up, down, left, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
In version 14, we've split it in half. So now blue tiles move a tile only horizontally by row.
East, west.
East, west. Orange tiles now move north, south. And then the question is, well, what does the gray tile get to do?
And it made so much sense to say gray tile just moves things diagonally. I think that's what we thought the feedback was telling us. And so the very next day, we started playtesting that version, version 14. And I made the joke again, box it, ship it, I like it, let's go. But in the playtesting, we also realized that even though the rule is really smooth, a blue tile moves a tile left to right, orange tile moves a tile up and down, the gray tile moves a tile diagonally. Whew, so simple. Easier to understand than anything we've ever done, but probably some balance issues being that gray can move something four spaces, whereas the other colors only move two spaces, left or right, whereas a diagonal can go four different ways.
I'm not sure I agree that it's as big a problem as you and I'm so bad think.
Go on.
That's it.
Okay.
We played like what, three games with it tonight?
Just tonight. But we weren't tracking the data on the first five or six, seven, eight games we played. We need a lot more games, yes. But in all three of those games, Mark Gray won.
But that wasn't to my recollection, and it's not fair to say, oh, I remember it was how many games we played. Gray did not win every game of the games that we played the previous night.
Of the previous night, no. And there's also like, are we trying to build a game where every color can win 33% of the time? I'm not sure if the answer is yes or no to that.
I don't think the answer has to be yes for us to accomplish what we want with the game. Box and ship it.
Box and ship it. It's a little bit like Azul. Very thinky.
Well, we jumped very quickly from end of all these playtests to here's what we're doing now. Here's the changes. Here's the new version. Did you have any other takeaways that we haven't touched on yet?
I think the biggest one for me is there are so many resources out there if you want them, if you want help, whether that's going to Board Game Geek, whether that's just going to Reddit, whether that is seeking out communities like Break My Games or Protospiel Online or Golden Gate Game Makers or whatever your local board gaming community is. I think that's the biggest thing for me, is that there are so many people interested in this hobby, interested in this industry, that have this shared passion. And if you seek them out, what you're going to find is that they're willing to help you. I think that's the thing that I take in the most from this weekend, is that everybody I met, everybody that I talked to, was genuinely interested in helping us develop this game. And that's awesome. Like, I don't know where else you get that. So special thank you to Heather and everybody at Protospiel Online who helped make that event run smoothly, whether that was people in the back end working on the scripts to make the website interact with Discord, to the volunteers that were in Discord and placing people into games and promoting your games, and of course, all of the other designers and playtesters. Thank you to Greg Poole with Golden Gate Game Makers, and especially Valgus, who is somebody who helped make that happen, who kind of, you know, put the Golden Gate Game Makers stamp on that. And, you know, one of the things that I really loved at the end of that was there were several people who joined the Discord for the Golden Gate Game Makers who didn't have a game ready to play, but they said, oh, now that I see what this is, I'm going to come back next month and I'm going to have a game. I'll be ready. So I'm really looking forward to playing those games.
The Misplay Podcast is brought to you by Mike C., Missy, JP Savard, Parney, Kyle Flowers, Adjos, Brian Bins, and Peter. Consider donating at buymeacoffee.com/themisplay. If you'd like to become a featured sponsor of the show, find our form at themisplay.com/sponsors. Thinking, because I don't have a good answer.
Well, think about it and come up with a great answer. I'll cut all the in-between.
Wow, he's a magician.